Good evening, everyone. Well, in looking at the strategy, one has to look back over the last decade to sort of try and understand where we've come from to look at where we're going to go. And the one lesson that we've seen in the last 5 years or so is that it is not business as usual. We're in a new era where obviously there have been the need for brutal cost cutting in all areas where public money is used. And actually in science, the reality has been that we have not seen anything like the pain that the arts, for example, have seen. The meetings that I have where I'm involved in a science-based institution versus those where I've been on the board of some of the arts institutions are completely different in their tone in having to deal with the changing of funding. So the question is, how did we do so well? How did we convince the Chancellor? And how does that relate to the strategy? And what, in turn, science has to deliver back as part of that? Now, the word growth is the word that appears here. I think it's very important to understand that growth is understood in a slightly broader term than just economics. So, for example, where science can produce benefits that's societal, for example, the healthcare system, that is part of this sort of concept that we have of growth. Now, when one starts talking about growth, obviously, this is the sort of bread and butter of the economists, and we have some of those in the room, and they're great experts. I'm afraid I'm a humble mathematician and get very quickly lost. You know, I pretty much subscribe to the mathematician's view of economists, which is N economists in a room, N plus one opinions, and they say even worse things about us. So the simplest way I find of understanding this driver for growth is something that the ex-CEO of Rolls-Royce, John Rose, used to say, which is there are only three ways of creating value, prosperity. You dig it out of the ground, you mine it, and sadly we're not sitting on vast gold reserves under Peckham or anything like that. Or you grow it, and living in Suffolk, and I assure you that the UK farmer is incredibly efficient, so we're not going to be doing a lot more of that. Or you use know-how to turn one thing into something else that's more valuable. And that is why in this review we see the role of science and innovation as crucial in that growth agenda. We have gone through a very interesting period of change where science had got itself into a state where there was a much greater separation between applied and industrial and pure science. You know, we think back to sort of golden age of the gentleman scientist. And in fact, we're standing in an institution here, the Royal Society, that for the first couple of hundred years of its existence had those two parts of science very closely interlinked. And then they drifted apart. And one of the fascinating changes is that now there's a very conscious effort to bring them back together. So now that we're in this world where the science strategy is so much about linking those things, how does one think about the actual work that's being done? Well, a very simple way of thinking about it is that one can think about three categories. We can have scientific knowledge which is there for wonder. How did the universe come about? We can have what you might call bluish sky research, things like quantum physics, where we're still fundamentally not setting out every morning to do something useful, but it's likely to be useful. And then we have traditional applied sciences. For example, we might take some of those quantum methods and start to produce wonderful photonic devices for the electronics world. And of course, the big cliche debate that breaks out is blue skies versus applied. I think from my experience of being on both sides of that, that's a fundamentally flawed analysis axis. A lot of the things that I've seen in the fastest moving applied areas have come directly from the other areas. If we look at something like research in astronomy, that's led to devices and algorithms which have totally changed, for example, work done in maximum entropy in astronomy, underpins a lot of the work now which drives machine learning and is one of the most commercially important areas of applied algorithm work. So I think very important that when we're looking at the strategy, we don't get bogged down in this idea of pure versus applied. What we need to do is look much more at themes and how can we actually get those themes to deliver impact when we stumble across something. Now, that's a very important difference. The point being here that we're not going to say we're no longer doing Blue Skies research because this is about the growth agenda. We're going to carry on doing that. But where we have not succeeded in the past is when something appears that actually is useful, the fruit falls off the tree, we are not exploiting that. One way of looking at it is that we have an amazing situation with our excellence and our science base in the UK. It's gold. But it's like being a country which is gold rich but mine poor. We haven't been great at converting that into economic impact. So much so that when I go to Silicon Valley and I'm feeling a bit lonely and I want to get a few friends together, there'll be Brits. And there'll be Brits who will be head of engineering at many of the great technological companies that we see in the US. They got their training here, they did their research here, and then they left, and that value is being created there. But it's a high-class problem to have. Many countries would love to have our science base. What we need to do now is make the changes which are envisaged in the strategy here to continue to move the progress that we've made in this area. So where are the difficult bits in the strategy? So being a very practical approach, if we take the plan, which looks pretty good, where is it going to be difficult to make it happen? Well, the first one is, how do we pick the effort and the allocation that we put into different parts of research? And the reason this is important is that what you get in organisations like the research councils or any company is you get an institutional inertia. So, for example, if you're funding one area, lots of people get involved in that and you get nameplates on the doors and you get institutions around it, and then they become very good at applying for grants, and it becomes very difficult to turn that tap off and rebalance in the light of what you should be doing. So whilst no one's expecting anyone to be picking winners, certainly not politicians, the idea of picking themes, I think, is very strong. Now, I wanted here to come up with some nice examples of how one might try and rebalance these things. But of course, the difficulty is whenever you pick an example, I know that there's going to be someone from that group in the room. And I am fearful for getting home safely tonight. You know, you imagine the physicists, if you sort of question them, well, you know, there could be a horrible, sad accident with some higher power laser as I walk out the door. Or you know, the biochemists I definitely wouldn't mess with because, you know, I would just slump over in the soup and it would never be traced as to what it was. So I thought, well, you know, how do I sort of show the problem? And one of the biggest problems about this kind of allocation of research is that the very experts you're going to are part of the process. So, you know, I was thinking, perhaps if I think about butterflies, that would be safe. They can't get me. It's a, you know, entomologist. But then again, I could end up, you know, sprayed on Pall Mall. And, you know, you can just see the police report now, can't you? You know, I found the deceased on the pavement. I noticed that he was covered in strange little white caterpillars with black dots. And then, you know, I inquired of the research councils if they could identify these caterpillars. And I was put in touch with the only UK expert on strange little caterpillars with white dots, who informed me, although it was a Madagascan caterpillar and extremely rare, they were actually quite common in Pall Mall, and so it probably wasn't foul play. The point here is that we have to be up for a mechanism which starts to break up some of the inertia that we see. So I am going to pick on a few big kids here who can definitely defend themselves, because I don't think I'll be stepping on too many toes. But very simple balance might be the supercomputing research area has a good history of being government-funded and research and things like the Met Office and that sort of area. How do we balance that against something like algorithms, which are incredibly economic important at the moment, but don't come from a traditional government-supported research area? Somehow we have to make those two line up. Another very simple example might be you know, the benefits that we're seeing in society from genomics versus perhaps a traditional area like particle physics. So we have to be prepared to start to really question some of our assumptions if we're going to align the strategy with the growth agenda, and that comes down to really shaking things up. And I'm very pleased to see that this is covered in the strategy. It's a lot more difficult than you might think. So one of the government departments sent out some questionnaires to work out what the areas we should be doing research in. And an overwhelming response came back, wave power. And I just looked at this and I thought, well, there's no way that wave power can be that dominant. And so my conclusion was that someone must have got to the postman that was actually taking the surveys out. And you can imagine lots of people doing wave power, sort of filling in the form. The difficulty is, how do you actually get that to happen? I'm very pleased that the engineers have cornered two-thirds of the speakers tonight, so we're doing very well. There may be ways forward. One of the things I'd like to do a little advert for is a Go Science initiative, which is called the Science Landscape, which allows anyone to log on and start to create a taxonomy of British science, but also the dependencies. You know, this piece of research requires this. And it's been a fascinating thing because it's crowdsourced and then the machine deals with all the things you'd expect. So we've had individuals that have tried to insert the whole of the arts under science. We've had other people who tried to delete whole branches of science. But luckily the machine can work through that, and what we've got now is an incredibly rich landscape which we can use to understand the interdependencies, and that's something which I hope you'll become involved with. One of the things we need to be very careful in the strategy is not trying to do too much. And whilst there's always political reality put into these things, for example, trying to solve regional economic problems by bending the science strategy can be a very bad mistake. You know, there was a period where every Welsh Valley's development agency was trying to set up a nanotechnology centre. All that will happen is they will fail. And so what one has to do is take a slightly more nuanced approach. And, you know, the strategy, I think, treads a reasonable line on that, but one could see that could very easily get out of control. The next one is technology transfer and science exploitation. The most important thing to understand here is the level of ambition. If you go to a technology transfer office of a university, or you read one of the department's publications, you would believe that this is working incredibly well because everyone has an example. What you have to do, though, is see it in the context of the excellence of the science base. And actually, our efficiency in going from that excellence to economic impact is still very, very low. And so what we have to do here is be very careful not to be patting ourselves on the back because we've got a few examples now. Great progress. We have to do much, much better at this. We are losing a lot of possibilities there. We're definitely going the right way, but we must understand what success looks like. It looks much greater scale in that transfer. There are a series of technical problems. One of them is mentioned briefly because it's a poison chalice in the report, and I hope that we'll be a little bit braver, and that's IPR, intellectual property rights. This is the most controversial subject when it comes to the universities. Some university chancellors believe that it should be absolutely owned by the universities. At the other end of the spectrum, you have an approach like Herman Hauser that says make it basically automatically available with perhaps a golden share model so there's no friction in the technology being actually used. And then there's another camp that thinks that the researcher should own the technology, not the institution. It is a massive nightmare for a small to medium-sized company to try and work with a university to get through this when they don't have large numbers of patent lawyers. Every university is different. And although it is controversial and when it gets taken on, it will lead to a lot of difficulties in terms of people having disparate views, this needs to be cracked. It is a major friction in the transfer. Another simple one is the VAT rules. If you move a small little business onto the end of a bench in a university, which is exactly what we want to achieve here, you can fall foul of the VAT rules and suddenly the institution starts to pay VAT. It's the kind of silly little thing that can be sort of fixed and move forward. Skills. I think Anne did an excellent job at talking about the STEM issues. The one thing I would say that this is rather like being a knight in armour turning up to kill a dragon. and suddenly you see the skeletons of multiple knights lying around you, it means that all of the good efforts before have failed. And that tells you one thing, which is you're probably going to fail again, which means you should have more than one plan. This is so crucial to fix, and it's so difficult. There are some very nice things in the strategy. I particularly like the idea of getting STEM qualified female teachers back into teaching after they leave to have children. I think that would be a very good thing to do. I think we need to look at some very clever augmentation of the limited number of teachers we have. Perhaps it is time to start thinking about some of these new approaches like MOOCs. And then the last thing is feedback. If I'm applying to university, or even I'm deciding on my exams that I'm going to do when I'm 14 or 15, at the moment there is no reliable feedback as to what that gets me. If I choose media studies versus I choose chemistry, what does the outcome look like? It's absolutely crucial that we make that information available so that people can do that. And that, I think, is something that's very welcome in the strategy. The most important things to wrap up, though, that I think science needs to understand about the science strategy is the pact has been made in terms of science funding, which says that because of importance of science and what it can deliver in terms of growth, that it is being preferentially treated up to now. What that means, though, is that that faith has to be delivered on. And there comes a point where it's going to be important for science to actually explain how it is succeeding. And I think it's got a great story. If I look back at the rate of technology transfer, the impact that we're seeing now, it is so much better than it was a decade ago. But it is very, very important to tell that story. And I'm afraid a slightly dirty word sometimes. Sometimes people think this is cheating, but a little bit of marketing doesn't do any harm. It doesn't do any harm in terms of showing the impact that science is having. It doesn't do any harm in terms of, for example, convincing girls to do physics. And when I say marketing, I don't mean outrageous claims. I was at a meeting with David Willetts with the mathematicians. And the mathematicians had got this message, and like many of the different groups, had commissioned a report about why the mathematical sciences were really important for the UK economy. And David was handed this. And the mathematicians started talking about it. And one of them said, you know, he read the report and said, oh, I'm not sure about this. I think the impact here claimed for mathematics into the UK economy just looks far too high to me. And David looked at that and walked out. And as he was walking out, he said to me, that's the first time I've been in a meeting with a lobby group where they've handed me their glossy brochure about the impact and they've said that they think the numbers in it are too high. And actually, the one thing it did was give great credibility to the mathematicians. Now, as I carried on down the corridor, I thought to myself, wow, perhaps that was an incredibly cunning psychological ploy by the mathematicians. And then I thought, no, they're mathematicians. It was actually what happened, and perhaps a psychologist could do that. So the important point is that what science has to do now is realise it has to tell the story. It can no longer say, you know, I'm a doctor, trust me. It has to put that effort into doing the reporting. So just to wrap up in conclusion, we have in British science a series of very high-class problems. We have absolute excellence in the science space, and the number one priority is to maintain that. Next high-class problem we have is that we do have a strategy here and a government that understands the importance of science over some of its other calls for funding. And we have the high-class problem in that we've made great strides in taking the wonderful asset that we have in our people and our science base and starting to get impact. But there are things that science has to deliver as part of this strategy. It must take a hard look at itself. We can no longer just fund things because they have become self-fulfilling animals in themselves. We must deal with institutional inertia. We must keep excellence at all cost. And we must realise that whilst I think we can make the argument that blue skies research is absolutely consistent with the growth agenda, that can only be made as an argument in that when we do see something come up, we grab it and we make sure that it is executed. There are dragons here. The STEM problem, I think, is going to be, in terms of education and teachers, is going to be incredibly difficult to solve. I think it's going to need some real bravery to deal with the IPR problem, and also real bravery to deal with the immigration problem, which Anne highlighted so well. So if we take this Parliament and the one to come as the two halves of a football match, I think that science has pretty much played a blinder in the first half. And I think in the strategy we've got really quite a good workable game plan for the second half. What we've now got to do is actually make sure that that gets implemented. Thank you very much.